Excuse me, is this thing on?
Whoa. Excuse me.
You're welcome.
Guitar up.
One,
turn
two,
that guitar
three.
Up.
Hi, and welcome to In the Studio. I'm Redbeard, bringing you the stories behind the greatest rock and roll albums in history. Today, we'll go in the studio with a band that gave us some of the greatest rock and roll anthems of all time.
In the late 60s, as you know, FM radio was really experimental. I mean, there were very few restrictions. People did damn near anything they pleased in terms of what they played, and people were really hungry for new, progressive, different things. And so we succeeded not because we were like everything else on the charts. We succeeded because we were like ourselves and no one else. And so those that were willing to take a chance with something really gave us that shot. You don't know what the reason is. Why don't you come with me, little girl, on a magic carpet ride? Hello, this is John Kay, and you're in the studio for the Best of Steppenwolf.
In the world of rock and roll, overnight sensations are rare indeed. But back in the summer of 1968, the debut from Steppenwolf hit the top 10 and sold more than $1 million worth of albums. That initial release kicked off a stretch that saw 6 Steppenwolf albums and 11 Steppenwolf singles occupy the national charts virtually nonstop for the next 3 years. Perhaps even more amazing was the fact that Steppenwolf singer and main songwriter John Kay ever got the opportunity to lead a rock band in the U.S. at all. Born in Germany in 1944, Kay's father had been killed in World War II before young John was even born. When the war finally ended, John's widowed mother was trapped quite literally behind the Iron Curtain with her one-year-old son, John. Then in 1949, when Kay was just 5 years old, his mother attempted a daring escape to the West. To this day, John Kay remembers that night more than 40 years ago when he and his mother found freedom in West Germany.
Somehow or another, my mother made contact with a couple of brothers that were, I guess, employed by the railroad near the new Iron Curtain border, and who were familiar with the area and who were basically smuggling people across the border for a fee. And so one night, a group of us, a dozen to 15 people or so, made an escape to West Germany. And the way they did that was that they separated the men from the women and children so that they would be almost like a decoy group, you know, and so on, giving the women and children more time to make it through. And they cut the barbed wire and so forth. This was back in 49. Things were not quite as fortified as they later became. It was basically ditches and barbed wire and you know, light and gun towers, you know, every so many kilometers apart. And, you know, border patrol with dogs walking up and down. Anyway, we made it. And I then spent the next 9 years or so in West Germany, where I grew up going to school. And then we decided, or rather my mother and my newly found stepfather, my mother, we married, decided to emigrate to Canada.
A top 10 single in October 1968, that's Steppenwolf with Magic Carpet Ride. As we learned a moment ago, Steppenwolf's John Kay spent the first 5 years of his life behind the Iron Curtain in East Germany. So you can imagine how John must have felt when the Berlin Wall fell, which finally freed the people of his heritage. Here's John Kay of Steppenwolf.
All of those developments were something I did not expect to see in my lifetime. And when I was at home in my new home in Tennessee in 89, in November, watching what I saw on TV in Berlin with the people celebrating on the wall and coming through the wall, it just unlocked a unsuspected intensity of emotions on my part. My wife, who is also from Germany, we both kind of just stood there and wept for a while. And I had difficulty really coming to terms with, you know, all these kind of emotions that came up, you know. I mean, childhood memories that went all the way back to the age of four when I was still living in East Germany and so on. And it stripped away, I think, a lot of emotional calluses that had been built up, you know, just living the modern life.
Sure.
Dealing with your fellow human beings and sometimes getting, you know, a few whacks here and there that make you a little bit tougher, a little more cynical, a little more defensive, a little less open. And, you know, at that time, I had more of a feeling of a certain degree of pride being part of the species again, which there have been moments when I have been tempted to abdicate from the species. So, you know, it was really one of the high points, I think, in my recent years. And to play in Berlin as we did, and to play for an audience that was at least half people who had who still lived in what, you know, until a few short months prior had been known as East Germany and East Berlin, it was just a tremendous emotional experience.
Written by John Kay, Larry Byram, and Jerry Edmonton of Steppenwolf. That's Hey Lottie Mama. It was on the Toronto, Canada club circuit in 1965 that singer John Kay first hooked up with a band called The Sparrows. At the time, Kay was a solo artist performing blues and country, while The Sparrows rocked a bit harder with an electric blues feel. After shortening their name to simply The Sparrow, John Kay and company headed west for first the L.A. rock scene and then up to the San Francisco Bay Area. But lack of money and too many false starts eventually took their toll on Sparrow. John Kay picks up the story.
After a return engagement to a Los Angeles club on the Strip, we had a major falling out amongst ourselves, and we said, that's it. Meantime, my girlfriend had gotten her immigration visa, had come to L.A. to join me from Toronto. The INS made her immigration visa contingent upon us getting married. We had to get married within 10 days of her arrival. We ran down to the L.A. courthouse where they were doling out $5 assembly line weddings, you know. You take him, you take her. Right, $5, done, out. So there we were, living in this little $90 a month apartment, and the band was history, and I'm just newly married. She's looking for a job, I'm looking for a job, and L.A. all of a sudden looks like a big, nasty town. Well, in moves next door to us, this fella, who, oddly enough, had just married a girlfriend of my wife's from Toronto, Canada. So these two women know each other, and they get to talking. Oh, yeah, my husband, he's a producer for ABC Dunhill Records. So I get to talk to him. His name is Gabriel Meckler. And he says, well, you got any stuff lying around I can hear from The Sparrow? I said, yeah, sure. We got these miscellaneous tapes. He listened to them, says, you know, that's interesting stuff. You're still in touch with any of these guys? I said, yeah, the drummer and the organist, they're just a couple of blocks down the road, you know, twiddling their thumbs like I am, looking for something to do. He says, well, why don't you put a band together, get a guitarist and a bassist, and let's cut some demos, you know, because ABC Dunhill, what the hell? I got an in with them, and let's go for it.
Yeah, from their 1968 debut album. That's Steppenwolf's cover of Sookie Sookie, a minor R&B hit for Don Covey in the mid-60s. Coming up next, we'll find out how Steppenwolf came to be featured on the very first rock and roll movie soundtrack. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio with the best of Steppenwolf.
Welcome back to In the Studio, this week focusing on the best of Steppenwolf. I'm John Kay, and now back to Redbeard.
Thanks, John. Back in 1969, Dennis Hopper, Peter Fonda, and Jack Nicholson starred in a counterculture movie about personal freedom called Easy Rider. Ah, yes. And when Easy Rider became a runaway hit, it helped focus attention on a pair of songs from Steppenwolf, Born to Be Wild and The Pusher. You see, it was Easy Rider that first set the trend of spotlighting popular music to set the mood in a film. But as it turns out, this fact was not the visionary intent of first-time director Dennis Hopper. According to John Kay of Steppenwolf, Hopper featured pre-recorded songs by Steppenwolf, The Byrds, Jimi Hendrix, and others out of utter desperation.
They did something that, you know, they say ignorance is bliss. Well, I think in this instance it was, because prior to Easy Rider, you know, Easy Rider was the first motion picture that had an exclusive, I mean, strictly rock and roll soundtrack.
That's true.
And as I understand it, you know, Dennis had no idea that hitherto there had been no such soundtrack album where artists from six or whatever it was, different record companies, would be on the same album. How do you do that? Who gets to release it? Who... You know, what would make another company say, yeah, you can have my artist, you know? So, to Jay Lasker, our president at ABC Dunhill Record credit, he managed to pull this off. I don't know how, but he got, you know, ABC Dunhill got to release the soundtrack
album. Oh, yeah, and your stuff was obviously...
Right in there.
I mean, the point music.
Right. And so Dennis supposedly just said, hey, you know, we've run out of money on this film, and we can't pay these regular guys in Hollywood to make a soundtrack, so... Tell you what, let's just, you know, plop in all these tunes and call everybody up.
All right, time out. Hold it. Is that what you meant by ignorance? Are you telling me they ran out of money?
Oh, absolutely.
And instead of having original and innocuous soundtrack music, which no one would care about after the movie was done.
Right.
Out of desperation and out of lack of money, they said, let's take music that's already been pre-recorded.
Right.
And put it together in a montage, a collage, and call that a soundtrack?
They called up all the artists and said, let's do a spec deal.
I can't believe it.
And we said, fine, man, the movie is great. You want to use our music? Just work it out with our managers. You don't need to pay us a dime now.
You know I smoked a lot of grass. Oh, Lord.
One of the most misunderstood rock songs of all time. That's Steppenwolf with the Hoyt Axton composition, The Pusher. Never released as a single, The Pusher nevertheless gained a great deal of notoriety as a result of being featured prominently in the movie Easy Rider back in 1969. Some of the American public were not ready for one of the first anti-drug songs, seeing it only as blasphemy. But as John Kay of Steppenwolf explains, the words should be taken literally. Biblically.
Oddly enough, a writer in the Official Baptist newspaper, which came out of Texas at the time, I believe, in 69 or 70, not only defended the song, but applauded the song. Because he said not only is it anti-hard drugs, but its use of the phrase goddamn is in the true biblical sense. In the sense that may God damn this person for what he does.
And I used to try to explain that. I don't think I ever convinced anybody.
Exactly. And
I could never get my point across.
We played in Winston-Salem one time. And we arrive and we're met at our hotel.
That's in North Carolina.
Yep. We're met by the mayor, the police chief, and the fire chief.
Well, because what you said may have actually been inflammatory and started a fire.
Well, they said, I'll tell you what's happening.
Started a fire.
They said, we have a local preacher running for public office, and he has gotten all your albums, and he has a problem with a number of your songs, not the least of which are The Pusher, which you won't be able to perform here. So I said, well, look, you know, we will play The Pusher. However, we will not, I will not, since I'm the singer of that song, sing the two words that apparently you have this big problem with. They said, well, if that's what it's got to be, I suppose we can live with it. But be aware, uniformed officers will be on the stage. And if you sing that phrase one time, you will be taken off that stage. So I said, fine, as long as we both know where we stand. Went up on stage, played the whole show, great audience, no incidents. Comes encore time. You can hear him chanting already, the pusher, and go out. I told him, I've made a deal with these people, and I'm not going to break it. My deal is, there are two words in this song that I will not sing. However, nobody said you couldn't sing it. 9,000 people topped their lungs, screaming, God damn the pusher. We were seeing a lot of red faces backstage.
You say it was this morning when you last saw your good friend.
Another anti-drug song written by Hoyt Axton and covered by Steppenwolf called Snowblind Friend from the spring of 1971. Up next, we'll wax political with John Kay. I'm Redbeard, and you're in the studio with the best of Steppenwolf.
Welcome back to In the Studio. I'm John Kay of Steppenwolf, and now back to Redbeard.
Thanks again, John. Being a product of their times, Steppenwolf had never been afraid to sing about the issues that concerned them, as evidenced by songs like The Pusher and Snowblind Friend. But when their fourth album, called Monster, was released in October 1969, Steppenwolf pulled out all the political stops. Once again, here's the rocker who once ran for city council, Steppenwolf singer John Kay.
Yeah, I mean, these were the days of the Vietnam War, the campus demonstrations and so on, and we obviously had stated our position on certain things like don't step on the grass, Sam, and, you know, the ostrich, and take what you need, which was basically, I guess, one of our first environmental songs and so on. You know, but on a flight back from New York one time, we all got together in one of the lounges there, and we were talking about the next album. They said, well, you know, we've been sort of stating our position on various things, and how about getting it off our chest in one consolidated kind of effort that hangs together? Because we had, a lot of people as part of our audience who were responding to what they felt was us reflecting their own views in social and political matters. So Monster resulted, and Move Over was part of that. And yes, certainly, it was all political/social opinions.
With a top 30 hit from the fall of 1969, that's Steppenwolf with Move Over. Written by Steppenwolf singer John Kay and producer Gabriel Meckler, Move Over included the line, "The country needs a father, not a big brother." John Kay still believes that line is as relevant now as it was in the late 60s.
To me, what we desperately need, and I think a lot of people thought that they might have this in Reagan because he was this sort of benign, grandfatherly father figure that exuded all the charm and the sort of kindly manners that somehow, you know, drew a lot of people to him, but who, in my opinion at least, was a tremendous disappointment in terms of what actually got done or what did not get done.
Or what
perhaps
got taken away.
Right. I mean, there are a lot of Americans who were better off before him. That's
right.
Certainly. So, you know, again, I think we don't need so much a father in the sense of somebody telling us what to do, an authoritarian figure, I don't think, but someone whose integrity we believe in, someone who truly does have the good of the nation and its people at heart, someone who can reinstill some belief in the whole system, which I think ever since Watergate and from then on has been gradually stripped away layer by layer.
She asked me, baby, I could share a sorrow.
It's called Rock Me, and along with Born to Be Wild and Magic Carpet Ride, that song gave Steppenwolf the hat trick, top 10 singles in 1968 and 69. But more than any other tune, it was Born to Be Wild that secured a place in rock and roll history for Steppenwolf, speaking directly to and for anyone who's ever felt the need to break loose. Born to Be Wild ultimately influenced and inspired a legion of rock and rollers. Here's John Kay.
There's been a bunch. There's been a bunch. Even Springsteen has done it as an encore. The funny thing about Born to Be Wild is it was, in some ways, a late bloomer in the following sense. First of all, our album was already in the top 10 nationally before Born to Be Wild came out. So we had already gotten a lot of mileage out of The Pusher and some other things that were being played on FM radio. You know, in the late 60s, as you know, FM radio was really experimental. I mean, there were very few restrictions. People did damn near anything they pleased in terms of what they played, and people were really hungry for new, progressive, different things. And so we succeeded not because we were like everything else on the charts. We succeeded because we were like ourselves and no one else. And so those that were willing to take a chance with something really gave us that shot and gave us the longevity on that first album to even go as far as the third single into it, you know. So then Born to Be Wild, as you say, kind of took the country by storm in 68. But then Easy Rider came along. And Easy Rider caused Born to Be Wild to be really permanently etched into the psyche of that whole generation worldwide. And with the years that have followed, Born to Be Wild and Magic Carpet Ride and a few other songs have been featured in over 20 major motion pictures out of Hollywood, numerous television shows, various uses which have introduced our music to a second, maybe even third, whole new generation.
Would you believe that song started out as a ballad? It's true. That's Steppenwolf with a song that perhaps embodies the spirit of the turbulent late 60s better than any other, Born to Be Wild, and whose lyric coined the term heavy metal. We'll be right back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard, thanking John Kay for taking us back to the days when Steppenwolf was born to be wild indeed. And you can get all of the Steppenwolf songs you've just heard, plus even more, on the latest double compact disc set, digitally remastered. It sounds fine. Special thanks this week also goes to Ron Rainey and Tracy North. You can write to In the Studio at Post Office Box 6190, Burbank, California, 91510. In the Studio is a Bullet production, produced by yours truly, Red Beard, and Jim Nelson, written by Jim Nelson. Production assistance, editing, and digital mastering by Rick R.J. Lane. The executive producer of In the Studio is Stephen R. Smith. This week in the studio, it's the 25th anniversary of Steppenwolf.
In the late 60s, as you know, FM radio was really experimental. I mean, there were very few restrictions. People did damn near anything they pleased in terms of what they played, and people were really hungry for new, progressive, different things. And so we succeeded not because we were like everything else on the charts. We succeeded because we were like ourselves and no one else. And so those that were willing to take a chance with something really gave us that shot. Hello, this is John Kay, and you're in the studio for the Best of Steppenwolf.